Please be aware that this podcast has reference to drug and alcohol use and paraphernalia and may not be appropriate for some people in early recovery. Hello everyone, my name is Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Ketley Daniels.
And we really hope you're enjoying our Treat Addiction podcast. The information in this podcast cannot replace your seeking a treatment provider, which you can easily do at SAMHSA's National Helpline at findtreatment.gov or 1-800-622-4357. In the last episode we did was a really important one because we talked about the most commonly used treatment for opioid addiction, which is Suboxone, which has now acquired a household name. And people, like we refer to facial tissue as Kleenex and we refer to soda as Coke, the primary treatment for opioid addiction is Suboxone. So everyone has, you know, facility with understanding or knowing what Suboxone is.
It's true. And we were talking briefly about whether people would recognize a generic name.
Exactly,
yeah.
Buprenorphine
what
is
that?
A tongue twister.
And if you say Zobzolve, that's another tongue twister.
Another tongue twister.
Yeah, you're right. It was a very packed episode with a lot of information that might require maybe a second listen. There are so many advances in medicine, notably in the treatment of addiction, that we have to dedicate a separate episode for the treatment of opioid addiction.
I really feel very humbled to be part of medicine because a lot of it has just, not only does it have an incredible impact on people's lives, but to see it sort of evolve in front of your eyes over the last two, three decades is quite an experience. And the rapidity with which there are amazing advances. Every time, you know, we have to keep up with medicine. And the stuff that you read is like, oh, it can be kind of whiplashing. The revolution in opioid addiction began with the advent of Suboxone in 2002. And numerous lives were saved and even more were transformed.
Interestingly, the opioid antagonist, naltrexone, was approved for the treatment of alcohol addiction in 2006, but it wasn't until 2010 that it got approved for opioid addiction.
And you know, I've got to say, Vivitrol, which is the injectable form of naltrexone, is also a beautiful medication. It is available as a pill, like we talked about, but our studies show that it is has much greater effectiveness when it is used in an injectable form. And the one that is most commonly used in the United States is Vivitrol.
With so many options, how do you decide who gets what medications for their addictions?
Like we were discussing, and contrary to general opinion, people with addictive disorders are very interested in treatment. And actually, they can be very innovative. So very frequently, they come to the office with their minds made up, their homework done, and they know what kind of treatment they want. And some of the credit for this has to be given to the internet and the information age, where there's so much valuable information that is available at your fingertips. And due to the inherent gregariousness of human beings, word regarding treatment spreads very fast. And patients will come in with their minds completely made up as to what kind of treatment they'd like. And there's definitely a good number, I look in the schedule, who come in specifically requesting Vivitrol.
And I think you're right. With the internet, it makes it so much easier for people to just check out what works, what doesn't work, what would I like, what problems
Precisely.
Would I have. And then they can come to us with specific questions. How do you go about starting someone, though, on Vivitrol?
So like we discussed in the previous episode, we first take a detailed history of the patient's drug use, previous treatments that they've had, what their medical history is, and what medications the patient is on. A physical exam is also needed, and each patient should get detailed blood work. This is especially important to ensure that the patient does not have any liver disease.
And it is very important that we try patients on all medications before we inject them with something that may not be, it will not have a short life, so we have to be very careful with that.
The patient also has to have taken their last opioid a minimum of 7 days previously and test negative for opioids in the urine drug screen at the office. Because Vivitrol is a monthly injection and its main side effect is fatigue, I generally play it on the safe side and place the patient on oral naltrexone first and see the patient again in a week. This way, we can get the Vivitrol approved by the insurance company and also see if the patient has had any side effects.
So who do you think are the best candidates for Vivitrol?
And that's really an excellent question. There are some organizations and some professions in which Suboxone is not allowed because Suboxone is an opioid. Occupations like truck drivers and pilots, but they do approve of Vivitrol. And it really works so well for both alcohol and opioid addiction that there are patients, and patients like to be sort of graphic. And they'll say that if they were given, after they've been on Vivitrol, if they were surrounded with alcohol or heroin, they would not use them. And the antagonist naltrexone and Vivitrol works so well that it also takes away the desire to use, which is pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome, although I have some people who they actually miss the high and they want to stop it so they can go back to the high. Isn't that interesting?
And that's why the oral naltrexone doesn't work because they miss it. They'll stop the oral and they'll go and have a binge and then use and then come back and want to go back on the naltrexone and then go on withdrawal because naltrexone will induce withdrawal immediately.
So does Vivitrol hurt the shot, the injection? Because I'm thinking, do I really want you to inject me every month in my left butt cheek?
It does not. Vivitrol injection does not hurt. We just make sure that we mark which butt cheek we injected in so we can alternate on a monthly basis, not always the same one.
I would appreciate that. But then there are those who perhaps they don't want the Vivitrol. When do the patients who want Sublocade or Brixadi, how do you select those patient types?
So Sublocade is a monthly injection of buprenorphine, and which is the active ingredient of Suboxone, and it was approved in 2017. It was intended to address the issue of taking Suboxone daily. And this is one option that a patient who is stabilized on an 8 milligram dose or higher of Suboxone, they can start on the Sublocade, which is 300 milligrams for the first month, and then 100 milligram for the second month on. So the idea was to for the patient to not have to take the Suboxone every day. But patients are so innovative and smart that in my experience, they've generally been using it for getting off of the Suboxone.
But you said, though, that the majority takes the Sublocade to get off Suboxone.
Yeah, and they do that because in the addiction community, word spreads very fast and patients learn about new treatments. And this is a very pleasant development that I'm noticing in my practice, that patients want to go off the Suboxone. And also in my established patients, the ones that we affectionately call monthers, we always discuss with them. I give them the option of Sublocade. I give them the option of going on Vivitrol. And in my patients who've been on Suboxone, I'll ask them, and the ones who are kind of amenable, then I explain to them what the option of Sublocade looks like. And they can take it for indefinite treatment. Now insurance companies will approve of indefinite treatment with the injectable. Previously, in the beginning, they did not. They would only approve for 3 months. Or we can use the Sublocade for getting off the Suboxone.
So what's so special about the Sublocade that it works as it does so well in weaning and stopping those who want to stop the Suboxone?
So the Sublocade forms a deposit under the skin and slowly releases the buprenorphine in the body. In fact, even 1 year after the last injection of Sublocade, buprenorphine is detectable in the urine of the patient. Isn't that remarkable? I think this is where the marvels of medicine really. And this is perhaps why it's so magical, because it is so gradual. And the medication is being released slowly, so the person is really not going into withdrawal.
And it sounds so freeing.
Yes, yes.
You can just gradually wean off of it. Yeah, that's beautiful. Is the Sublocade a final stop for people then?
No, it's not. And because we recognize that addiction is a chronic disease, I tell the patient that they're always welcome to return should they feel they need the Sublocade beyond 3 months or should they relapse? It is very important to keep the door of treatment open and make the patient's office visit a judgment-free interaction.
So what has it been like for you and your Sublocade patients? Have any of the ones that wanted to stop the daily use of Suboxone received their 3-monthly injections of Sublocade returned for treatment?
Actually, none of them have, and some keep up with our office counselor. And from the counselor, we know that they're doing well, that they're maintaining sobriety. And they have latched on to the importance of keeping up the behavioral aspect of addiction.
You also mentioned, though, that Sublocade can only be used if the patient is on 8 milligrams or more of Suboxone. What if they're on less? What if they're taking just 4 milligrams?
And, you know, it's really very interesting that in medicine we are so fortunate that we have an answer to pretty much a lot. So if they're on less than 8 milligrams of Suboxone, we use another medication called Brixadi, which was approved for opioid use disorder in May of 2023.
That's good news for those who want the injectable option. What's the procedure then for Brixadi?
As a general rule, I only use injectables after the patient has been stable on oral Suboxone or oral naltrexone. Patients can be so self-righteous that I remember this 44-year-old that came asking for Sublocade directly after using opioids. And I had to do a bit of educating and explain that we would be better off with starting on low-dose Suboxone and then making the transfer, and fortunately, he agreed. So with Brixadi also, I prefer that the patient is stable on Suboxone at below 8 milligrams, and then we inject the Brixadi for 1 week. If the patient is tolerating this well, we can convert it to a dose that would be sufficient for 1 month, and thereafter again decide if the patient wants to wean and stop the buprenorphine or continue taking the Brixadi monthly. And you'll notice from this that this is an interactive process. This is not a monologue or any kind of pressure or it's my way or the highway. It's an interactive, bi-directional process of talking to the patient. And shared decision-making. Thank you.
Shared decision is a good thing. Yes. We're partners in this treatment.
That's right. Yes.
There are a lot of options for treatment of opioid addiction. It really is a matter of when the person is ready. I was sharing with a patient of mine who's struggling with this particular behavior, and I said to him, as gently as I could, you know, you have to want this. And I said, and I can tell you don't really want this. I said, you may have to ask your spiritual higher power to help you find a reason to want to. And then I said, you know, there's even more layers. You have to want to want to want to.
Oh, wow.
But I think some people just don't even, they don't want. But
yes.
If they want, look what we've shared with them. So many options.
So many options. And, you know, that's what we were discussing previously, too, that the patient has to be ready for recovery. Mm-hmm. And if they're ready for recovery, we have the treatment. And they really need to come in with the motivation and the right reasons for sobriety and not wanting to do this for fear of a divorce or a command of a parent. Or for them, treatment is generally not successful. They have to do it for themselves. And there certainly is the concept of motivational interviewing, but in all these years, I've just seen success with people who are intrinsically motivated. They have to get to that point, whether it's, you know, hitting bottom, whatever it is, it's different for different people, mm-hmm. but they have to want it. Right. And I always say that another one of my little sayings that if I had the motivation pill, my face would be on the cover of Time magazine.
Oh, that's almost like mine, the one I have for exercise that if I could bottle little bottles of exercise, I would prescribe it to everyone.
That's a good one. I like it.
I've really found that this was very informative, providing juicy, tangible information for our listeners. And now talking about not only the oral treatment, but also the injectables, they have options. And if they want what we have to offer, they can certainly access treatment. It's available.
Yeah, and I find the injectable treatment of opioid addiction very empowering as well. Because with Vivitrol, the patient is not on a controlled substance and many achieve sobriety. And with Brixadi and Sublocade, the person is like on cruise control, doing really well. Though Naloxone or Narcan is not a treatment for opioid addiction, it is a very vital part of the medications we have because it revives people from an opioid overdose.
I agree. this is such an important piece in the whole disease that it should probably be explained a little bit further, though.
So naloxone is a short-acting opioid antagonist. It is extremely helpful because it can be given both intravenously under the skin, which is called subcutaneously, or as a nasal spray.
With the opioid epidemic, we were discussing how in the foreseeable future, we probably still will have naloxone available in large public areas like airports and malls where they currently have external cardiac defibrillators, that this is such an important thing that it should be disseminated as widely as possible.
As widely as possible. Emergency medical services carry naloxone, and as a general rule, it is one of the first treatments tried for someone who is unconscious. And it can be not funny, but kind of sad too for patients and very tricky because one of my patients who does have opioid use disorder also has low blood pressure. And she almost passed out, had what we call syncope. And EMS was called and they gave her naloxone. And she went, because she was on full 16 milligrams, she went into full-blown withdrawal. Wow. And she was in her 60s. She's in her 60s.
But unfortunately for her, it was a negative, but generally, it's very safe and life-saving.
Oh, it most certainly is. And really, there has to be widespread dissemination of, like we mentioned, with the cardiac defibrillators, it should be around. I've got to tell you a hair-raising story. I was so transfixed when my patient told me this. And it just tells you how daring and irresponsible people can be. So she describes being in a car with her friend and having her two-year-old baby in the car seat in the back and talking to her friend about taking IV heroin. So for the two of them, they had a bag of heroin, and my patient took a look at it while she's driving and said that it was too much and she'd been sober for a while, which is really, I mean, that makes me sweat, and that it would kill her. And her friend said, no, we'll share it. But first, the friend wanted to use cocaine. So in the friend's cocaine high, she takes the cocaine. She forgot to divide the heroin and mixed it up and, listen to this, injected my patient in her arm while my patient was driving. So my patient slumps over because now she's overdosed and she hits some object on the street. The car stops, and when she comes to, there's this very large paramedic that is standing over her, and she had been given several doses of naloxone, of Narcan. And she could feel that her chest, immediately, she could feel that her chest was sore because he had done CPR on her. Mm-hmm. So then it's really amazing how things turn out for people. She had the wherewithal that she saw that her friend was standing in the background, and she yelled at her to run with the child. And so the friend runs to a gas station, and thereafter the patient's husband comes and picks up the child. The key piece is that they hospitalized my patient because she needed so many doses of naloxone to resuscitate her. And the whole episode, I mean, if you just it's like a video that runs before your eyes. It's so nerve-wracking and is so much, and so sadly, the part of the life of so many addicted patients. And what we do to make sure that the patient is prepared for overdose, so anyone who is on an opioid, whether it's for pain or for opioid use disorder, we prescribe naloxone for each patient, and we make sure that the person knows how to use the naloxone, and they have taught a family member where the naloxone is and how it has to be or should be used. We also tell them to make sure that the naloxone is not locked. So I ask them the trick question that, so is this dose of Suboxone good for you? Yes, it's good. Do you keep it locked? And they will say yes. And if they say no, then they're instructed. But the naloxone, sometimes I'll ask them that does your family member know where your naloxone is? And they'll say that, you know, they'll get a 50-50 right that, oh, it's locked. It's like, you can't keep it locked, you know? So it's really important for family members to know. And you can see from this how powerful naloxone is, that even though it takes several doses sometimes to resuscitate or revive a patient, but this patient of mine now is in sobriety for 10 years. She has a completely wonderful life and her children are grown. It's like you know, one of those turnarounds that we were talking about.
We love those success stories.
We really do. So we really hope that our audience has been enjoying our podcast series, and we hope that they will subscribe and share the podcast with family and friends. And you can listen on wgte.org/treataddiction or anywhere you get your podcasts. Just search for Treat Addiction. It is only through awareness and education that we can tackle this epidemic together. I want to thank my co-host, Dr. Ketley Daniels, for a wonderful conversation today. I'm your host and producer, Dr. Majabeen Islam.
And I am your co-host, Dr. Ketley Daniels.
And our executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. Until the next episode, do remember, patience in difficult times and gratitude always. See you soon.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.